Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Banking Matters. I'm your host, Daniel Baker. Joining us today, we have Ginger Laurent, CEO of the Louisiana Bankers Association. Ginger joined the LBA staff in 2000 after spending over 16 years as a banker in Southwest LA markets. She holds an undergraduate degree in communications and a master's in business administration from the University of Louisiana in Lafayette. Ginger is certified as a senior professional in human resources. She is a graduate of the Graduate School of Banking at LSU, the LBA School of Banking, and LBSST. In addition to Ginger's role as Chief Executive Officer for the LBA, she also manages the Louisiana Bankers Service Corporation, Bankers Benefits of Louisiana, and Louisiana Bankers Education Foundation. Ginger, welcome to the show. We're happy to have you on.
Well, it's great to be here. How's it going?
You know, it's a gorgeous day here in Texas. I hear that Louisiana is hot and humid today. So I'd say normal day in Louisiana, right?
It's a good day. It's a normal, good normal day.
Well, before we really jump into things, I always like to give my guests an opportunity to kind of introduce themselves about how they got involved in banking. So I know I gave your bio briefly, but what is it that got you involved in this financial sector in the first place? I mean, it's a great industry, but what got you started here?
I guess I actually started when I was in high school. I had a summer job at a local bank and got to do everything. You know, I opened accounts. I did telework. I am dating myself, but I actually moved CDs from paper to computer. I did that for extended period of time, learned how to run a proof machine, which of course that's dating myself too. And then when I finished undergraduate school, I went to work at a bank in New Iberia, which is Southwest Louisiana. Mm-hmm. And I'd say this to young bankers now is there is a moment in time when your job at the bank ceases being your job and becomes who you are. And I think that transition happened for me early on after I finished college and started working at the bank full time. It was pretty early on when I realized that I was a banker. And so that kind of passion and that connection to the industry and what we do and why we do it was very strong and was set. It was set for life, it looks like. So that's where I started and, you know, done a lot of different things in the bank and then been here at the association for 23 years now. And
so I got to ask then, because, I mean, you were a human resources expert, senior professional there for a little while. At least you've got that certification. But Why the transition from banking? Because, I mean, you started out in banking. Why the transition from that into the human resources?
Well, actually, throughout my career, well, I guess at some point in my career, maybe 6 or 8 years in, the bank I was working with got bought and moved. And when we moved over to the new bank, it was, you know, a fairly small bank, and they were looking for a human resource officer. And the president said, "Are you game?" And I said, "Absolutely, let's give it a shot." And it was a great experience. And still today, I mean, I keep that certification. I work with the human resource officers of the banks around the state. We, as an association, facilitate about 30 different peer groups with bankers around the state, and human resources is one of the ones that I facilitate myself. And that keeps me involved in what's going on in the human resources area. So it really was a great transition. I loved the opportunity to hire in and onboard and train new employees, and I could it helped that I had maybe done some of the things that they were being hired on to do, so we could have a conversation about that and I could kind of get a feel if they were a good fit. So I think it was great. I think it was a great transition. And I guess I've done human resources since that time on, in addition to whatever other roles I was playing. But
It's such an essential part of the banking industry, right? I mean, locating, retaining, and developing like quality talent, such a vital piece of this industry.
And so important. And right now, more than ever, because coming out of the pandemic, and every industry is looking for talent and retaining talent. And so the bankers have been in that same arena and trying to make sure that they are doing the right things to hire and retain quality talent. So I think it's just been heightened in the last few years.
So let me ask you then. You mentioned something that maybe, if it's all right, if I pursue a little bit, you mentioned doing the right thing to retain that talent. What's the right thing?
You know, I really do think that is individualized. And by that, I mean, both for the bank, you know, the bank, what's the bank's mission, vision, values, and strategic plan, and staying true to that. And then finding the right skill set to fit into that, because I think that the fit has to be there, and that right. And that your employees have to fit into the bank's strategic position. And then looking for those skill sets that do fit, because you want to set your employees up for success. And if you bring in the people who don't have the right skill set to fit in your environment and to contribute and to be part of the team, then that doesn't give them the opportunity. So it ends up not being fair to anybody, not mm-hmm. fair to the bank, and not fair to the employee. So I think we do have to spend the right amount of time and effort on the front end to look for those specific skills that are going to be successful in our environment. So it's individualized on the bank's position. Mm-hmm. You know, what is your strategic vision as a bank? And then individualized by employee. Is this employee skill set going to fit into that plan? So I think that's the right thing.
I can totally appreciate that. Because, I mean, you yourself, I think, is a great example of that, because you stepped into HR, which is a substantially different role than being front house banker or anything like that. And I mean, you obviously excelled in it, and it fits you perfectly. So I completely agree. Finding the right people, the right place, the right mission, and everything like that. Right. So I'm 100% bad. I'm 100%.
You know, you can find all kind of little things that you can hang on there, because then that's going to be different for every bank and every person. But if you have that core, then, and that's what you work on, it's going to work.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you letting me kind of dig into that rabbit hole a little bit. I know we hadn't talked about that as one of our official topics, but with your experience as in human resources, I wanted to give that a chance to talk about. Today, one of the elements that we had discussed talking about was fair lending, because I know fair lending is kind of at the forefront of bankers' mind, especially with the rollout of something like 1071, which has a huge impact on fair lending. What are, from your perspective as a CEO of Louisiana Bankers Association, what are some of the concerns you're hearing about from your banks? How are banks addressing fair lending, and what do you expect to kind of see going forward?
Well, we think 1071 is going to fit in fair lending, because we don't know what they're going to do with the data yet. Right. We just know that they want to gather the data. But I guess stepping back a bit on fair lending, you know, we've lived with fair lending. And so the banks are, you know, they have the pieces in place to monitor and track. Mm-hmm. And so that they can tell their story and tell it with the data that they are doing. You know, banks, and you know this, banks want to make good loans. That's what they want to do. And they want to make them to every person who can pay it back. And so I think that monitoring and building that data and telling that story is important, because they want to be able to confirm that is what they're doing. I think 1071, you know, we have this entire list of data that we are we will have to figure out, banks will have to figure out how they will collect it, how they will put it together, how they will report it. And just the unknown of not knowing what is going to happen with the data is a little scary. Because with fair lending on the consumer side, the bank can use that data to tell their story. And that is important. On the 1071 side, where it's with small business and an entirely different product for an entirely different purpose, and trying to gather some of the same data, what does that what story does that tell for that product and that purpose? And I think we are in this limbo land of not knowing what that is going to be. And to me, that's the biggest fear. That's the biggest fear of what I hear from bankers is what is going to happen with that data and how are we going to use it to be able to tell our story and how are the regulators going to use it? And I think we don't know what we don't know yet on that piece.
So how do you see banks then reacting to that? I mean, there's that fear of like, hey, we don't know what's going to go on with this. How do you see banks reacting to it? And from your perspective, what kind of reactions would you want to see?
You know, we talked this morning, we're planning the Louisiana Bankers Washington DC visit is going to be in July. So we are planning topics that we want to discuss with each of the regulatory agencies when we get a chance to visit. And when under CFPB, we have some of those exact questions, you know, what is going to happen with the data? What is going to happen when you get the data? Now there are, you know, some movements in Washington. There are some bills that have been filed to try to push it back, repeal it, make it differently. I don't know. I have no idea, you know, what that is, what kind of chances that has of happening. But that's happening. So we will talk with our congressional delegation about that and about what's happening there. But we will definitely talk with CFPB about if they can give us more information. Last year, when we were in Washington and we talked about 1071 and the bankers talked about how, what a burden it was, but you know, not just a burden, it is, as we mentioned, it's a totally different product. The small business loan is a totally different product than a consumer-based loan, real estate-based loan, where fair lending has been residing. So they talked about all of that, but at the time, what response we got was that it was out for comment, and so there was, you know, not much information that they could share because they didn't have a proposed rule out. I mean, they had the proposal out, but they didn't have all the comments in, and so they weren't ready to discuss what the final rule would look like. So the final rule is out now, so we know what that looks like. Good, bad, or indifferent. We know what it is. And so we are hoping that we get a little bit more definitive information from CFPB this time on, okay, now you know. This is how it's going to come into you. This is what it's going to look like. Now you can help us understand what is it going to be used for? How is it going to tell the story? How can we tell our story with that data? So hopefully we do get a little bit more information and we can share that with you when we back.
So really, really what I'm hearing is like more information is hopefully forthcoming. Be informed, like follow the news, follow what's going on. And we're all kind of learning this together. We're all kind of going through this together. Is that a pretty accurate summary or layman's term of what you're saying?
It is, totally. And, you know, we've been doing training on 1071 since the proposal came out. So mm-hmm. we want to make sure that the banks are understand what's there and what is going to be expected. So in the most recently, we had a session at our convention at the end of April on 1071. And, you know, this was after the final rule was out. So it could be a little more definitive about what's in the rule and what the levels are and what banks could of each size could expect and when, you know, how it's tiered mm-hmm. over time, depending on the number of loans. So that we think that's important right now for banks to start to figure out where they fit based on the number of loans that they do and start to think about based on when they will be required to report what types of information and how you're going to gather that information.
Yeah,
it absolutely. feels like when they made all the changes to HMDA several mm-hmm. years ago, and it feels like we're in that same just heightened education period, just everybody trying to figure it out. Like how do we gather it? How do we put it together? How do we report it? All of those things.
So that's actually a perfect concept to bring up, because education, obviously, like we were talking about 1071, we're talking about fair lending, and education plays such a vital role when it comes to just fair lending as a whole. And so coming from your background, I know you said that you trained new staff and you did education for new staff, but human resources obviously plays a part in training existing staff and everything like that. What kind of programs have you seen be effective when it comes to training your staff about fair lending? So not necessarily about 1071 specifically, but fair lending as a whole. Like what kind of programs have you seen really be effective in today's environment?
You know, I feel like fair lending training has, you know, been going on for a long time. And mm-hmm. I do think that as practical as you can get on the training, the better. The real life experiences when you're working directly with bankers in their environment, helping them recognize the places in their normal day of activity when these issues will come up. This is an opportunity for you to ask questions. This is an opportunity for you to gather information. So going through those, I guess it's more like scenarios and roundtable discussions and what's best practices and what mm-hmm. are the challenges. And when you run up against this obstacle, what's the correct way to get through that obstacle and get the right information. So I think that type of education where they feel like they can take what they're learning and put in place in their normal day-to-day activities, I think is very important. And you are totally right. I mean, banks in general have been working on fair lending education for a long time. They put in processes in place and programs and monitoring systems in place to help with that process. But you still want your people to understand why we're gathering information, what it's being used for, what it means, and how that influences any interactions that they have with their coworkers, their customers, because I think that's important for them to understand why we're doing these things and that it has meaning. It has a very definite meaning. So I do think that ongoing education as we move into 1071 is going to be in the same way extremely important and how it works in the process.
So a little bit of background about myself. I actually come from the banking industry as well. So I worked at two different banks prior to my law school experience. And it was a mid-sized bank and then a large bank. And one of the things I noticed between both banks was the difficulty of getting the information and the importance of the information across to the Jane and John Smith in the branch. Like, the HR can see it, management can see it, everybody, like the people higher up, like they see the importance of these things. But have you seen any programs that can effectively communicate to John and Jane Doe?
Yeah, I had this conversation this week with a banker and a new trainer coming into the bank. She called and said, look, do you have any information that can be helpful to me? Any templates, any policies, procedures that can be helpful as I put together this training program for my bank? So we went through, you know, we certainly have some resources that could be helpful. But one of the things we talked about a good bit is, and what I've seen that could be successful too, is these weekly, I'm going to call them sales meetings, or you could call them staff meetings, or but the smaller the group, the better. So like if you have a branch and you're going to bring that branch together for 10 minutes every week, and you're going to talk about one thing every week, something different every week. So where you build on their education, you're not setting, putting them apart for 6 hours in a day and trying to put all that information in, but you're building on that every week, that consistency and having that conversation and letting them see, oh yeah, that I see where that piece fits in this conversation that I'm having with my customer today. Oh, we talked about that this morning. Let me, I want to include that. And so what they can do is take small bits, put it in place, see it work, and then build on that knowledge going forward. So you might do a role play. You might do just a topic, or you may say to your group, your team, each person takes a week and you're going to present one piece of this process. Well, then you have multiple subject matter experts on one team, whereas it's not one person communicating in their own way every time. You have different people, different communication styles, and you're going to touch different people in different ways throughout that process. So I think having them included, being able to do training that way is important, and it is very valuable. It may not always be possible depending on the structure of the bank. So you have to come up with other ways. And you could do it this way. You know, you could do it virtually now. There are lots of tools that allow you to be more interactive with virtual tools. And you may zoom in and participate in a team meeting from another source. But still, I think that success comes from talking about it consistently in small bits over time. And I think that can be successful.
Yeah, I actually really like that. So I remember that when I was in the branch, they would have like a daily huddle kind of thing, and the branch manager would lead it, or one of us would lead it, and we'd go over like the different sales goals, and we'd go over like different elements. I think incorporating an element of training into that is definitely like a great idea. It's definitely scalable as well, because you can do it in the small local branches as you need. Right. I think that's a great idea.
And the larger the bank, you know, it's going to take some coordination, the larger the bank, because you want to make sure everybody's getting the same information. So yeah, I get that, but somebody's got to be responsible for that and getting it out in a way with some talking points and all that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, in your huddles, in your daily huddles, that's perfect. It's a perfect place to put it. And it doesn't have to be long, just real quick.
Just the spark notes, like hit the important points and move forward. We don't expect them to memorize every element of the reg, but know the concepts and the principles behind it. I completely agree. That's great.
Yeah.
So I know we had thrown out like a several different topics that we had considered discussing today, things like UDAP and fraud. But we had such a good time talking about 1071 and fair lending that we're kind of running out of time a little bit. But I wanted to give you a chance, and I like to ask this of all my guests, a piece of advice. if you could give one piece of advice, Ginger, to banks today, I mean, it's a tumultuous time. Like, we've got large banks closing, like several large banks on the scale that we haven't seen before, closing their doors. We've got big regulations rolling out like 1071. It's a very interesting time to be in compliance and in banking management and even just banking as a whole. Right. What kind of advice would you give to banks today?
You know, bankers are so innovative, and they will figure out how to incorporate new regs, how to make it work to serve their customer. So if any advice, it would be know what your strategic plan is, know what your vision, mission, and values are, and stick to your game, and you keep doing the right thing, and you keep following your plan, and you keep building your teams to match that vision, and you are going to make it. You are going to make it, because you will make the right decisions based on that fact, based on your plan, and these other outside things will make you stop and think, and you think, okay, how does that change how I move forward? Do I need to incorporate something differently? But keeping your focus, I think, is so important. You keep doing the right thing, and you keep moving forward on your path, and these things are going to continue to happen. They always have. They'll continue to happen. It'll make you good. It'll make you better. It'll, because you're thinking through all that, and you're building these outside things are helping you to strengthen your ongoing path.
I really like that. I really like one part of that you said, stop and think. Like that's probably some of the best advice I ever received as a young man, was that when everything's going chaotic, stop, take a breath, and then move forward. So I think that's perfect advice. Well, Ginger, thank you very much for joining us for today's show. We really appreciate you having you and your experience join us for the episode today.
Great. I enjoyed the visit. Thank you.
For the rest of you listening in, thank you for tuning in, and that's Banking Matters.